Chapter 29, page 349. The Patience of Christ's Death. He was oppressed, and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth. Isaiah 53, verse 7. The chapter containing these words treats wholly of the sufferings of Christ. Hornbeck tells us of a learned Jew who frankly confessed that this chapter converted him to the Christian faith, and such delight he had in it that he read it more than 1,000 times. Such is the clearness of this prophecy that he who penned it is deservedly styled the evangelical prophet. From this verse I shall speak of the grievous sufferings of Christ and the glorious ornament he put upon them, even the ornament of a meek and patient spirit. He opened not his mouth, but went as a sheep to be shorn, or a lamb to the slaughter. The lamb goes as quiet to the slaughterhouse as to the fold. By this lively and lovely similitude, the patience of Christ is here expressed to us, whence we learn that Jesus Christ supported the burden of his sufferings with admirable patience and meekness of spirit. Patience never had a more glorious triumph than it had upon the cross. The meekness and patience of Christ's spirit amidst injuries and provocations is excellently set forth in 1 Peter 2, verses 22 and 23. Who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth. Who, when he was reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. In this point we have the burden of sufferings and provocations with which Jesus Christ was oppressed, his admirable meekness and patience, and the causes and grounds of the perfect patience he exercised. Roman numeral 1. The burden of sufferings and provocations which Christ supported was very great, for on him met all kinds of trouble at once, and those in their highest degrees and fullest strength. Trouble in his soul, which was the soul of his trouble. He began to be sore amazed and very heavy. Mark 14:33. The wrath of an infinite God beat him down to the dust. His body was full of pain and exquisite tortures in every part. Not a member or sense, but was the seat and subject of torment. His name suffered the vilest indignities, blasphemies, and reproaches that the malignity of Satan and wicked men could utter against it. Contempt was poured upon all his offices, upon his kingly office, when they crowned him with thorns, arrayed him with purple, bowed the knee with mockery to him, and cried, "Hail, King of the Jews!" His prophetical office, when they blinded him, and then bid him prophesy, who smote him? His priestly office, when they reviled him on the cross, saying, "He saved others, himself he cannot save." They scourged him, spit in his face, and smote him. All this, and much more than this, meeting at once upon an innocent and dignified person, one that was greater than all, one that could have crushed all his enemies as a moth, all this borne without the least discomposure of spirit, is the highest triumph of patience ever exhibited to man. It was one of the greatest wonders of that wonderful day. Roman numeral 2. Consider this almighty patience and unparalleled meekness of Christ supporting such a burden. Christian patience, or the grace of patience, is an ability to suffer hard and heavy afflictions according to the will of God. It is a glorious power that strengthens the suffering soul to bear. It is our passive fortitude, strengthened with all might, according to his glorious power, unto all patience and long-suffering with joyfulness. Colossians 1, verse 11. That is, strengthened with the might or power of God himself. God hath several kinds of burdens to impose upon his people, some heavier, others lighter, some to be carried but a few hours, others many days, others all our days, some more spiritual, bearing upon the soul, some more external, touching the flesh immediately, and the spirit by way of sympathy, and sometimes both kinds are laid on together. So they were at this time on Christ, his soul full of the bitter sense and apprehension of the wrath of God, his body filled with tortures. In every member and sense, grief took up its lodging. Here was the highest exercise of patience. Roman numeral 3. Let us inquire into the grounds and reasons of this perfect patience, and you shall find perfect holiness, wisdom, foreknowledge, faith, heavenly-mindedness, and obedience at the root of it. Number 1. This admirable patience and meekness of Christ was the fruit of his perfect holiness. His nature was free from those corruptions that ours groans and labors under. Take the meek Moses, who excelled all others in this grace. Let him be tried, and see how unadvisedly he may speak with his lips. Psalm 106, verse 33. Take a Job, whose patience is resounded over all the world. Ye have heard of the patience of Job. And let him be tried by outward and inward troubles, meeting upon him in one day, and even a Job may curse the day wherein he was born. Envy, revenge, discontent, despondence, are weeds naturally springing up in the corrupt soil of our sinful natures. I saw a little child grow pale with envy, said Augustine. The spirit that dwelleth in us lusteth to envy, James 4, verse 5. The principle of all these evils being in our nature, they will show themselves in time of trial. Our nature is fretful and passionate. But it was otherwise with Christ. The prince of this world cometh, and hath nothing in me. John 14, verse 30. No principle of corruption as an inlet to temptation. Our high priest was holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners. Hebrews 7, verse 26. Number 2. The meekness and patience of Christ proceeded from the infinite wisdom with which he was filled. The wiser any man is, the more patient he is. Hence meekness, the fruit, is denominated from patience, the root that bears it, the meekness of wisdom. James 3:13. And anger is lodged in folly, its proper cause. Anger rests in the bosom of fools. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 9. Seneca would allow no place for passion in a wise man's breast. Wise men ponder, consider, and weigh things deliberately before they suffer their affections and passions to be stirred and enraged. Hence come the constancy and serenity of their spirits. A man of understanding is of an excellent, or as the Hebrew is, a cool spirit. Proverbs 17, verse 27. Wisdom filled the soul of Christ. He is wisdom in the abstract. Proverbs 8. In him are hid all the treasures of wisdom, Colossians 2, verse 3. Hence he was no otherwise moved with the revilings and abuses of his enemies than a wise physician is with the impertinence of his distempered and crazy patient. Number 3. His patience flowed also from his foreknowledge. He had a perfect prospect from eternity of all which befell him. It came not upon him by surprisal. He wondered not as if some strange thing had happened. He foresaw all these things, and he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things, and be rejected of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed. Mark 8, verse 31. Yea, he had agreed with his Father to endure all this for our sakes, before he assumed our flesh. Hence, I gave my back to the smiters, and my cheeks to them that plucked off the hair. I hid not my face from shame and spitting. Isaiah 50, verse 6. As he guards his disciples against being offended in him by forewarning them what they must expect, these things I told you, that when the time shall come, ye may remember that I told you of them. John 16, verse 4. So he, foreknowing what himself must suffer, and having agreed so to do, bore those sufferings with singular patience. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, Whom seek ye? John 18, verse 4. Number 4. His patience sprung from the faith he exercised under all he suffered. His faith looked through all those dark and dismal clouds to the joy set before him. Hebrews 12, verse 2. He knew that though Pilate condemned, God would justify him. Isaiah 50, verses 4 through 8. And he set one over against the other. He balanced the glory into which he was to enter with the sufferings through which he was to enter it. He exercised faith in God for divine support under sufferings, as well as for glory, the fruit and reward of them. I have set, or, as the apostle varies it, I foresaw the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Therefore my heart is glad, and my glory rejoices. Psalm 16, verses 8 through 11. Here is faith exercised by Christ for strength to carry him through. And then it follows, My flesh also shall rest in hope, for thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thy Holy One to see corruption. Thou wilt show me the path of life, In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. Here is his faith acting upon the glory into which he was to enter after he had suffered these things. This filled him with peace. Number 5. As his faith, eyeing the glory into which he was passing, made him endure all things, so the heavenliness of his spirit filled him with tranquility and calmness under all abuses and injuries. The more heavenly any man's spirit is, the more sedate, composed, and peaceful. As the higher heavens, saith Seneca, are more ordinate and tranquil, where there are neither clouds nor winds, storms nor tempests, and it is the inferior heavens that lighten and thunder, and the nearer the earth the more tempestuous and unquiet. Even so the sublime and heavenly minded is placed in a calm and quiet station. Certainly that heart which is sweetened frequently with heavenly, delightful communion with God is not very apt to be embittered with wrath or soured with revenge against man. The peace of God appeases and ends all strifes and differences. The heavenly spirit marvelously causes a sedate and quiet breast. Neither was there such a heavenly soul on earth as Christ's. He had most sweet and wonderful communion with God. He had meat to eat, which others, yea, his most intimate friends, knew not of. The Son of Man was in heaven upon earth, John 3:13, even in respect to the blessed heavenly communion he had with God, as well as in respect to his deity. Number 6. As his meekness and patience sprung from the heavenliness of his spirit, so likewise from his complete and absolute obedience to his Father's will, he could most quietly submit to all the will of God, and never regret any part of the work assigned him. For you must know that Christ's death was on his part an act of obedience, he all along eyeing his Father's command and counsel in what he suffered. Psalm 40:6-8, John 18:11, Philippians 2:7-8. Now just as considering the hand of God in an affliction calms and quiets the gracious soul, as David, 2 Samuel 16:11, so much more it quieted Jesus Christ, who was privy to the design and end of his Father, with whose will he all along complied, looking on Jews and Gentiles but as the instruments ignorantly fulfilling God's pleasure and serving the great design of his Father. Such was his patience, and such the grounds of it. In making a practical improvement of this subject, I might use it in various ways, but the direct and main use is to press us to a Christ-like patience in all our sufferings and troubles. And seeing in nothing we are more generally defective, and defects of Christians herein are so prejudicial to religion and uncomfortable to themselves, I resolve to waive all other uses and confine myself to this branch, even a persuasive to Christians unto all patience in tribulations, to imitate their lamb-like Savior. Unto this, Christians, you are expressly called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example, that we should follow his footsteps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, reviled not again, when he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. 1 Peter 2:21-22. Here is your pattern, a perfect pattern, a lovely and excellent pattern. Will you be persuaded to the imitation of Christ herein? Methinks I should persuade you to it. Yea, everything about you persuades to patience in suffering. Look which way you will, upward or downward, inward or outward, backward or forward, to the right hand or to the left, you shall find all things persuading and urging you upon true Christian patience. Number 1. Look upward when tribulations come upon you. Look to that sovereign Lord that commissions and sends them upon you. You know troubles do not arise out of the dust. Behold, I frame evil and devise a device against you. Jeremiah 18:11. Troubles and afflictions are of the Lord's framing and devising to reduce his wandering people to himself. You may observe much of divine wisdom in the choice, measure, and season of your troubles. Sovereignty in electing the instruments of your affliction, in making them as afflictive as he pleases, and in making them obedient to his call, both in coming and going. Now could you in times of trouble look up to this sovereign hand, which holds your souls,
bodies and all your comforts, how quiet would your hearts be? I was dumb. I opened not my mouth, because thou didst it. Psalm 39, verse 9. It is the Lord. Let him do what seemeth him good. 1 Samuel 3:18. Oh, when we have to do with men and look no higher, how do our spirits swell and rise with revenge and impatience? But if you once come to see that man is a rod in your Father's hand, you will be quiet. Psalm 46, verse 10. It is for want of looking up to God in our troubles that we fret, murmur, and despond as we do. Number 2. Look downward and see what is below you, as well as up to that which is above you. You are afflicted, and you cannot bear it. No trouble like your trouble. Never man in such a case as you are. Well, cast your eye downward and see those who lie much lower than you. Can you see none on earth in a more miserable state? Are you at the very bottom and not a man below you? Surely there are thousands in a sadder case than you. What is your affliction? Have you lost a relative? Others have lost all. Have you lost an estate and are become poor? Well, there are some who cut up mallows by the bushes and juniper roots for their meat. They are driven forth from men. They cried after them as a thief, to dwell in the clefts of the valleys, in caves of the earth and in the rocks. Among the bushes they brayed, under the nettles they were gathered together. Job 30, verses 4 through 7. Are you persecuted and afflicted for Christ's sake? What think you of their sufferings, who had trial of cruel mockings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment? They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and tormented. Hebrews 11, verses 36 and 37. And are you better than they? I know not what you are, but I am sure these were men of whom the world was not worthy. Verse 38. Or are your afflictions more spiritual and inward? Say not the Lord never dealt more bitterly with the soul of any than you. What think you of the case of David, Haman, Job, Asaph, whose doleful cries, by reason of the terrors of the Almighty, may melt the hardest heart that reads of their complaints? The Almighty was a terror to them. The arrows of God were within them. They roared by reason of the disquietness of their hearts. Or are your afflictions outward and inward together, an afflicted soul in an afflicted body? Well, so it was with Paul, Job, and many other of those worthies gone before you. Surely you may see many on earth who have been and are in far lower and sadder states than you. Or if not on earth, doubtless you will admit there are many in hell who would be glad to change conditions with you, as bad as you think yours to be. And were not all these molded out of the same lump with you? Surely if you can see any below you, you have no reason to return so ungratefully upon your God and accuse your Maker of severity, or charge God foolishly. Number 3. Look inward and see if you can find nothing there to quiet you. Cast your eye into your own heart. Consider either its corruptions or its graces. Cannot you find weeds enough there that need such winter weather as this to rot them? Hath not that proud heart need enough of all this to humble it? That carnal heart need of such things as these to mortify it? That backsliding, wandering heart need of all this to reduce and recover it to its God? If need be, ye are in heaviness. 1 Peter 1:6. O Christian, didst thou not see need of this before thou camest into trouble? Or hath not God shown thee the need of it since thou wast under the rod? Be assured, if thou dost not see it, thy God doth. He knows thou wouldst be ruined for ever if he should not take this course with thee. Thy corruptions require all this to kill them, and as your corruptions call for it, so do your graces too. Wherefore think ye the Lord planted the principles of faith, humility, patience in your soul? Were they put there for nothing? Did the Lord intend they should lie sleeping, or were they planted there to be exercised? And how shall they be exercised without tribulation? Can you tell? Doth not tribulation work patience, and patience experience, and experience hope? Romans 5, verses 3 and 4. Is not the trial of your faith much more precious than of gold which perishes? 1 Peter 1, verse 7. O look inward, and you will be quiet. Number 4. Look outward and see who stands by and observes you under your trouble. Are there not many eyes upon you? Yea, many envious observers round about you. It was David's request, Lead me, O Lord, in thy righteousness, because of my enemies. Psalm 5, verse 8. Or as the Hebrew word there might be rendered, because of mine observers or watchers. There is many an envious eye upon you. To the wicked there can scarcely be a higher gratification than to see your conduct under trouble so like their own, for thereby they are confirmed in their prejudices against religion and in their good opinion of themselves. These may talk and profess more than we, say they, but when they are tried, it appears plainly enough that their religion enables them to do no more than we do. They talk of heaven's glory and their future expectations, but it is only talk, for it is apparent enough their hopes cannot balance a small affliction with all the happiness they talk of. Oh, how do you dishonor Christ before his enemies when you make them think all your religion lies in talking of it? Number 5. Look backward and see if there be nothing behind you that may hush and quiet your impatient spirit. Consult a multitude of experiences, both your own and others. Is this the first strait that ever you were in? If so, you have reason to be quiet, yet to bless God that hath spared you so long, when others have had their days filled with sorrow. But if you have been in troubles formerly, and the Lord hath helped you, if you pass through the fire and not been burnt, through the waters and not drowned, if God hath stood by you and hitherto helped you, oh, what cause have you to be quiet now and patiently wait for the salvation of God? Did he help you then, and can he not do so now? Did he give you water, and can he not give bread also? Is he the God of the hills only, and not the God of the valleys? O call to mind the days of old, the years of the right hand of the Most High. These things I call to mind, therefore I have hope. Lamentations 3:21. Have you kept no records of past experience? How ungrateful then you have been to your God, and how injurious to yourself, if you have not read them over in such a day as this. For to that end were they given you. Number 6. Look forward to the end of your troubles. Look to the end of their duration, and that is very near. They shall not be everlasting troubles if you fear the Lord, the God of all grace, who hath called us into his eternal glory by Jesus Christ, after that ye have suffered a while, make you perfect. 1 Peter 5:10. These light afflictions are but for a moment, compared with the vast eternity before you. What are the few days and nights of sorrow when they are past? Are they not swallowed up as a drop in the vast ocean? But more especially, look to their result. What do all these afflictions tend to and affect? Do they not work out an exceeding weight of glory? Are you not by them made partakers of his holiness? Hebrews 12. Is not the fruit of all this to take away your sins? What, and be impatient at this? Fret and repine because God is in this way perfecting your happiness, O ungrateful soul. Number 7. Look to the right hand and see how you are shamed, convinced, and silenced by other Christians, and it may be such, too, as never made the profession you have done, and yet cannot only patiently bear the afflicting hand of God, but are blessing, praising, and admiring God under their troubles, while you are sinning against and dishonoring him under smaller ones. It may be you will find some poor Christians that know not where to get their next meal, and yet are speaking of the bounty of their God, while you are repining in the midst of plenty. Ah, if there be any straightforwardness in you, let this shame you. If this will not, then number 8, look to your left hand, and there you will see a sad sight, and what one would think should quiet you. There you may see a company of wicked, unconverted sinners, acting under their troubles, but too much like yourself. What do they more than fret and murmur, despond and sink, mix in with their afflictions, when the rod of God is upon them? It is time for thee to improve when thou seest how near thou art come to them whom thou hopest thou shalt never be ranked and numbered with. Reader, such considerations as these would be of singular use to thy soul at such a time, but above all, thine eyeing the great pattern of patience, Jesus Christ, whose lamb-like carriage under a trial with which thine is not to be named, is here recommended to thee. O, how should this transform thee into a lamb for meekness?